Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. Here at 538, we love a good data set, and the folks at the Washington Post's Fact Checker recently passed a data collection milestone. According to their count, as of late last month, President Trump had more than 10,000 false or misleading claims since taking office. They tallied 10,111 claims in 828 days, and that's around 12 per day. The Fact Checker began its work during the 2008 election cycle with the goal of verifying statements made by politicians, interest groups, and the media. And during the Trump presidency, it's had its work cut out for it. Of course, it's hard to turn someone's level of truthfulness into an exact science, and we don't have real-time fact-checking for every president, but it's probably fair to say that President Trump is uniquely untruthful. In fact, in polls of Trump's characteristics, he routinely scores among the lowest for honesty and trustworthiness, meaning that even some people who approve of his overall performance don't always believe him. So today, we're going to dig into the Washington Post's data set and talk about the job of fact-checking the president. And here with me to do that is the fact-checker himself, Glenn Kessler. Glenn is the editor and chief writer of the Washington Post Fact-Checker and has reported on domestic and foreign policy for over 30 years. Hey, Glenn, thanks for joining me.
Glad to be with you.
So 10,000 false or misleading claims in 2 years and 3 months sounds like a lot, but people often think of politicians as being bolsters, basically. So how do you put that number in context?
Well, you know, I've covered every president since Ronald Reagan, and I have never encountered a president, let alone a politician, like Donald Trump. And I should note that I also covered Donald Trump when he was a business executive in Manhattan, and I was a business reporter. So I was used to his loose relationship to the truth. In the case of Donald Trump, while we did not, for instance, have this kind of database with Barack Obama, it's really a different order of magnitude. I mean, Barack Obama obviously made false or misleading statements. We collected a fair number of four Pinocchio claims for him, which is our worst rating. But in general, a lot of his statements he made were not off the charts wrong. He would end up with four Pinocchios when he got off the script, but he tended to stick very closely to vetted statements that he or his staff had written, and they had worked hard to actually check those facts before he said them. It was similar to George W. Bush. And you might remember it was a big deal when he got something wrong and stated the Union address. It was a news story for weeks and led eventually to the indictment of one of his aides. But that was a singularly rare example in the overall context of the statements that Bush made, whereas Trump, 12 a day, you just can't find a president that has done that.
And I have to ask, before we go too much further, why don't you use the word lie in classifying what the president says? How'd you make that decision?
Well, we have used the word lie, I should note. We did that last year, but we tend to shy away from it because I can't get into a person's head and necessarily determine whether or not they knowingly said something was wrong. In the case of Donald Trump, when we labeled something a lie, that had to do with his statements about the payments to Stormy Daniels and the other woman who alleged adultery. And in that case, there was an actual tape recording that Michael Cohen, his aide, an attorney, was able to produce, and you could say, okay, well, he knowingly said something was wrong. I mean, there are, in response to the Trump phenomenon, we have created something also called the bottomless Pinocchio.
Mm-hmm.
When we've rated something as three or four Pinocchios false and a politician repeats it 20 or more times, you know, at that point you can say, well, they really know that this is wrong. And so we created that, and Trump has now earned, offhand, I think the number now is about 20 of those. You know, it's, again, a lie is a kind of a conversation stopper, and I don't really like to use it very much.
All right. So this all amounts to a pretty big data set. What kind of conclusions can we come to at this point about what the president is untruthful about or when he's untruthful?
You know, I urge readers to, or listeners who are presumably also readers, to actually go to the database and play around with it, because it's actually a very fast search engine, and you can do all sorts of things with it. So there's two distinct things. You can see that over time, the statements he's made about immigration has emerged as the thing that he tends to mislead most about. And that is actually one of the animating issues of his presidency. The other thing you will see is that there was an incredibly sharp jump in the number of false or misleading claims made by the president after July of last year, which is when he essentially became his own press secretary. The White House stopped having regular briefings, and instead Trump came out and would have these gaggles with reporters and speak to them on the issues of the day. And that really shifted things. So whereas we have 12 on average a day since he became president, in the last year or so, it's now about 22 claims a day. And I mean, in fact, it was about a year ago that I gave an interview like this, and I made the bold prediction that he might reach 10,000 by the end of 4 years, because at that point he was at 3,000. And it seemed kind of an extreme position to take, but I figured I'd gamble and say he might reach 10,000 by the end of his first term. And here we are just a year later, and we've already exceeded that milestone.
You mentioned that immigration is the thing that Trump tends to mislead the most about. And I'm looking at this database right now, and some of the other things that rank up there at the top are characterizations of the trade deficit, the size of the tax cut that he signed, the health of the economy, the nature of the Mueller investigation, and NATO spending. I have to ask, though, what is the data collection process like? Do you track every single piece of content that comes from the president? Is it possible that these falsehoods or misleading statements are coming just because you realize them more or readers point them out to you more?
We look at everything he says or tweets. You know, the White House, this particular White House has made it somewhat difficult to track the transcripts of the president's statements. And they don't post transcripts of his rallies, which is a huge source of false or misleading information. But there is actually a very good database called FactBase, that's FactBase.se, which collects every statement the president has made, every interview.
Every rally, every off-the-cuff remark.
It's there. I mean, if he gives even an interview to a newspaper and there are like six quotes from the interview, they'll put that into that database. And it also has all his tweets, including the tweets he's deleted. And it actually has – they've actually gone back in time and collected everything he said going back since he became a public figure that is available. So that has been a huge help for us, and there are three of us on the fact checker team, and so we kind of randomly divvy up the days by month, and each of us takes a day and goes through line by line, sentence by sentence, every interview, every rally, every statement, every news conference. We identify things that look like they could be false or misleading. Some of them are ones that we've previously identified, so it's easy to tell. Others we have. Looks kind of strange. He used a number. Is that correct? You know, I was just before I was came up to talk to you, I was deep into his speech where he made some comments about a number of police officers who were ambushed, and he gave some numbers. So I was digging into the numbers for ambushes to see if he got that right or not. You know, this is on kind of a sideline. It's not the main part of our job. We write, you know, full-fledged fact checks. So I had determined that doing 10,000 claims added 115 8-hour days for myself and my team beyond our regular jobs.
Oh, wow. So this is actually a database of every statement, piece of content, tweet, utterance from the president going back to January of 2017. For the nerds in our audience, if I wanted to download all of this data, do you know how big it is?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we do make it available to academicians, people who are, you know, at universities who want to do research on it. And, you know, it's at least 10,000 cells, and it has all the quotes and everything like that. And I mean, the one thing I should note, because otherwise it would be even larger, but this is a decision we made at the beginning. The president tends to be somewhat repetitive when he speaks. So in a rally, he might three times say something that is false, the same thing. We'll only count one of those. Some people might disagree with that decision, but I just felt like it was more like thinking about the audience. The people sitting there are listening to him. Did they hear this false thing? If he said it three times, the same thing in a rally, to me, that it would be overkill to say we're going to count all three of those things.
You mentioned that immigration is one of the things that he's least truthful about. I mean, is that just like he says more untrue things about immigration because he talks about immigration more than any other issue?
Well, no, I think immigration was a big part of his closing argument before the midterm elections. He was talking about the caravans, the hordes of people coming to the border. Then he shut down the government in order to try to win funding for his promised border wall. So he has purposely put immigration at the top of the issues that he talks about, and he is particularly misleading when he talks about immigration. I mean, he's misleading about many, many issues, but immigration is one where he consistently gets many facts and figures wrong and says things that are patently untrue.
All right, I want to continue this conversation in just a minute, but first let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by WeWork. WeWork designs flexible workspaces for businesses of all sizes and industries. WeWork's versatile agreements starting at month to month are dictated by the unique needs of your business. Moving in is so easy, you'll never want to move out, and you can enjoy the complete peace of mind of knowing that you can expand or contract your physical workspace without any constraints. On-site community experts are dedicated to helping member businesses get the very best from their teams. All day-to-day operational needs like IT, maintenance, and cleaning are handled by WeWork, allowing you to focus 100% of your time building the future of your business. WeWork understands the dedication and time it takes to build brand identity and company culture, and because of that, WeWork's private offices, designed for teams of up to 250 people, come with a range of customizable options to make sure that the space is truly your own, so you can work where you want, but stay who you are. Head over to WeWork.com to find a location near you or learn more about WeWork's custom workspace solutions for larger teams. Today's podcast is also brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address. It's ZipRecruiter.com/538. That's ZipRecruiter.com/538. The numbers, not the letters. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, so digging a little bit more into how you classify statements from the president or just politicians in general, you have the Geppetto checkmark for something that is true, you have 4 Pinocchios for something that is totally false, and then you have, you know, 1, 2, and 3 Pinocchios in between. Is it difficult to determine how true or false something is within that scale? What's that process like?
Yes, it's, I will be upfront and say that the Pinocchios are a bit of a marketing gimmick.
All right.
It's not scientific. I'm not pretending to be like a person that sits there and
can weigh the truthfulness on a scale.
Right. I mean, it's not social science. We're in the newspaper business. We wanted to give away a catchy, simple way for people to see our bottom line assessment of a claim. Now, I've been doing this now for more than 8 years. So I know that we are internally consistent with the way that what I view is as 2 Pinocchios, which is more like something half true, and 3 and 4. You know, it's pretty easy to see a 1. It's pretty easy to see a 4. The dividing line between 2 and 3 gets a little fuzzy and difficult, and we might sit there, myself and my staff, debating that at some length. Is this a 2, a 3? Because it's a big leap, I think, to go from 2 to 3.
And oftentimes you're fact-checking the consequences of policies, right? Like, you know, who will have health insurance under this particular policy or what economic growth will look like. And even honest policy wonks will tell you that they don't know exactly how policies will interact with the real world. So how do you deal with those kinds of unknowns? What sources do you rely on?
Well, we try not to fact check, you know, predictions. If a politician promises something will happen, we might try to fact check how possible that might be. But it really, in order for it to get a Pinocchio rating, it really has to be in the realm of something we can, you know, we can document. I mean, this is not something we fact checked, but I know a story of when John McCain was going around the country running for president, he would promise to build 100 nuclear power plants in his first term. And apparently his staff came to him and said, you know, we've calculated this. There's no way you could possibly build more than 30 in 4 years. And McCain apparently looked at them and said, well, that's fine. And he went out and continued to say 100. So if that's something we looked at, we could say, you know, experts say there's no way you can build 100 in 4 years, and that would have been worthy of Pinocchio's. You know, it has to be related to a number, and it has to be something where they're saying something or claiming something that doesn't add up.
Right. Like oftentimes during the 2016 election, people would look at Trump's economic plan and say that level of growth would not be possible unless immigration increases by X amount. Right. So people make these kinds of judgments based on, you know, the data that we have from history and kind of making projections. So what kind of like sources are you comfortable using in terms of determining what is real, what is misleading, what's totally false?
Well, you know, we rely a lot on government sources.
Is that ironic at all? I guess.
No, I mean, you know, a lot of those things, the Census Bureau or the Bureau of Labor Statistics or organizations like that, the Congressional Budget Office, are, you know, good, valid sources of information. You have to be, you know, I did notice that HHS during the Obama years was not a particularly good source on data having to do with the Affordable Care Act because they would kind of turn the dials a bit to make things look better. So you had to be careful with that and the way they would frame things. And it's the same thing with the Trump administration and some of the immigration statistics they put out or things like that. So you have to be careful. But, you know, in terms of the data about, you know, the unemployment rate, you know, Trump in the 2016 election used to say the unemployment rate was 45%. Well, that you could prove was a for Pinocchio claim because you could just look at the data. What he was doing was he was counting every single person in the country that did not have a job, which included people that were retired, people that were in school, people that chose to stay at home to take care of their kids or another loved one. So these were people that chose not to be in the workforce and thus were not counted as part of the official employment statistics, and there was no way that that kind of claim would make sense. And of course, once he became president, he no longer said it was 45%. He said it was 4.5% and even lower.
Mm-hmm. Looking through this database of false or misleading claims, it looks like the most common false or misleading claim is about the border wall with Mexico being built. And part of the reason this is classified as a falsehood is because where it is being built, it's a bollard fence and not a wall. And so I'm interested, you know, to maybe some just casual observers of politics are like, a steel barrier that people can't get through, a wall. Like, what's the difference? What is the thought and philosophy behind how you fact check something like that?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with the way a politician had described what they were going to do. President Trump described in great detail what his border wall would look like and be. It was going to be a 40-foot-tall concrete barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular issue, in the case of the bollard fencing, a lot of it is replacement fencing. It was already fencing there. So these are restrictions that were put into the money that Congress gave. They specifically said none of the border prototypes that Trump talked about can be used for building this barrier along the wall. So a specific act of Congress nullified the things he had talked about. Because, there was a point there about a year or so ago where he actually toured border wall prototypes and said, this is what my wall is going to look like. And Congress reacted and said, no, it's not going to look like that. You can only spend the money for bollard fencing. And a lot of it, again, was also replacement fencing. There were very few areas that were new areas. Now, that is beginning to change, and we have to actually reevaluate and examine, and we have to see what those barriers look like and if he's actually getting close to building the thing that he talked about.
It sounds like it depends a lot on the context. And I'm curious, are there unique challenges to fact-checking President Trump that you haven't encountered before?
Yes. I mean, there are a number of things. One is the sheer volume of words he says or produces.
Uh-huh.
Most presidents, there was a point where actually Obama stepped back because his staff felt he was being overexposed and he was talking too much. And that was during the economic crisis. Whereas Trump just keeps talking and talking and talking. He's had the most interactions with the media, I think, of any president that's been in recent history, as it's been tracked.
Mm-hmm. As a result of that, the volume of how much he talks and the volume of how many false or misleading statements there are, do people just have less of a reaction? I mean, in the beginning, did people react more, or did the press react more to things that were false or misleading versus now?
Well, I do think he's, I can't say specifically, I do think that there's probably less of an outrage factor to things that he says or does because he's done so mm-hmm. much of that. The reason we decided to do this database was because we faced a challenge. He's repetitive and he doesn't drop claims that have been deemed as false or misleading. Obama would do that. He would not repeat something after he got four Pinocchios. He tended not to. But Trump just keeps saying it, undeterred by any fact-checking, though he's clearly mm-hmm. aware of the Pinocchios because on about a dozen occasions he's complained about how he doesn't like to get Pinocchios. But he just plows forward. And we didn't want to be in a position of constantly repeating things that we had already fact-checked because at heart mm-hmm. it's a column about policy and demystifying policy issues, and we couldn't just keep doing the same stuff. So we said, well, we'll put it in a database. And that way people will be able to find it and we don't have to keep repeating ourselves. We just didn't expect mm-hmm. that it would become such an all-consuming effort because he has greatly exceeded the what we thought he would be capable of doing in terms of speaking in false and misleading ways.
In the work that you do, have you noticed in covering other politicians or issue advocacy groups that other people feel more free to say things that are false or misleading in an environment where the president is saying false or misleading things?
No, actually, I've noticed the opposite, particularly with the Democrats running for president, which is actually not surprising. Every action has a reaction. So if you're running for president now, what is the best way to distinguish yourself from a guy who appears to have earned all sorts of criticism for not telling the truth? You're going to try to be more careful with your facts and figures. Now, we've given a fair number of Pinocchios to a variety of Democratic candidates running for president, but we've also encountered many instances where they are prepared with all sorts of documentation to back up what they said, where we've thought something was fact-checkable as false, and it turns out it was correct, or they got it pretty close, not enough to warrant a Pinocchio, where we've gone to them and said there's a problem with the way this is being phrased, and the next thing we know, it's taken out of the stump speech. So the Democratic candidates definitely, for the most part, are trying their best not to be labeled as a habitual misleader like the president, and I think it reminds me a little bit of when Jimmy Carter was running for president after Richard Nixon and went around saying, I will not lie to you. He was trying to distinguish himself from the previous occupant.
Is there any effect, have you noticed, amongst fellow Republicans?
I don't think. The interesting thing is, most politicians are like, used car salesmen. They're trying to sell you a product, a policy, and you have to check under the hood to make sure everything is okay. But I can't say that necessarily that because Donald Trump is so consistently false and misleading, that I've noticed that other Republicans have said, well, hey, if he gets away with it, I'm going to do this too. Because I would argue that Trump is not getting away with it. He has the lowest, consistently the lowest approval ratings of any modern president. And he does particularly poorly in terms of being rated for his honesty and trustworthiness. You know, we did a poll last year at the Post where we wanted to see if his statements actually, if people believed in what he was saying. And so we tested about a dozen of his most consistent false and misleading statements. We asked people, you know, we gave the statement and then the polar opposite and said which is more true, which is true or which is false. We did not identify that Donald Trump was the source of this information. And what we found was that most people said Trump's statements were not true, even people that were supporters of Trump. And the other interesting fact in that survey was that among there has been a question about it 10 years ago where people were asked, you know, is it important for a president to be honest and trustworthy? And Democrats, Republicans, independents all had the same result. About 71% said it was important. When we asked the same question as part of this poll, Democrats and independents were still at 70, 71%. Republicans had dropped to 49%, which to me indicates that they realized that Donald Trump is not telling the truth, but they just decided it was not that important to them anymore.
Mm-hmm. As we wrap up here, we've focused a lot on Trump, and of course you look at, as we've mentioned, other politicians and interest groups and the media. What is the overall philosophy behind the project of the fact checker at the Washington Post? And do you feel like your significance has changed at all, or your philosophy has changed at all in recent years?
I don't think it has changed. As I said, at heart, the fact checker is about demystifying difficult policy issues. The hope is that if you are a regular reader of the fact checker, you will get a better understanding of tax policy, healthcare policy, foreign policy. You know, we use the quote that we are fact-checking as an entree into a way to have a detailed discussion about a complex policy issue. Because politicians speak in code words. They try to, you know, and they try to, you know, shade the truth in order to advance their policy objectives. And that really has not changed. I mean, with, you know, as I said, you know, we started this database in part because we felt Trump, so many of the things he says could be so quickly and easily fact-checked, and they were so repetitive, it was taking us off our core mission. But so it, our core mission remains the same, which is to try to dispassionately explain policy issues in an interesting and entertaining way, make that information accessible to ordinary Americans who might be puzzled by the complex issues that are often debated in Washington. Because what I have found is the more complex an issue is, the more susceptible it is to misleading statements by politicians.
What effects do you think dishonesty from politicians have on our politics and our country? Is that something that you think about in the work that you do?
Yes, of course. I mean, dishonesty is, you know, it undermines public trust in politicians and institutions. And I think one of the pernicious effects of the Trump era is that he has tried very hard to undermine trust, not only in institutions like the Justice Department, the FBI, but in particular in the news media, to say that everything, these organizations, which are professional organizations, is either tainted by bias or tainted by corruption or tainted by falsehoods. You know, it's a serious problem. I often tell politicians that, you know, if you have to, you know, sell your policy with misleading facts and figures, this may be a problem with your policy, you know, because we really want to, we all should start from the same set of facts and then decide what the best policy is, as opposed to gushing up the facts in order to sell a policy that is not supported by the facts.
All right. Well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me, Glenn.
You're welcome.
Glenn Kessler is the editor and chief writer of the Washington Post's Fact Checker and has reported on domestic and foreign policy for over 30 years. As always, if you have any questions or comments, get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com, or you can also tweet at us with any questions or comments. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you soon.